Reverend Levy, talking to you from the Holy Yeshiva of Rav Shalom Arush, Yerushalayim. We're learning the book, Gan HaShalom, on page 87 in the Hebrew version. We are still learning how to put our wife in first place. And from the length of this chapter, we can see that it's not pashut, it's not simple. There is a lot to learn. Nearly.
We only go back to the chapters from the beginning. Like,
start again.
I had a I come out of the bathroom and I'm reading the biography on Theodore Roosevelt.
Okay.
And it happened to be that, like, in my sense, his first wife died of a certain disease. So I wanted to, like, get on my mind, I want to know more about this disease. So I get on my phone, I'm on Wikipedia, my wife is like, can you bring me a sweater? I'm cold. And I'm like, sure, give me a second.
Oh.
And I lost all track of time. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. It was not good.
Right.
It was.
It's good. It's good. It's a good. Hashem shows us all the time
how far we are.
Yeah, where we're holding. Right, we think we're doing okay, and then he will remind us occasionally that actually we're not really the tzaddik that we think we are, that we'd like to think we are. And it's good, because otherwise I can get confused into thinking that actually
I'm
the tzaddik. I know what I'm doing, I've got it all done. I read the book. I looked at it twice. Even
two.
And then I've got two of my books. I've got a Hebrew version and the English version.
That's the book before I even knew it. Like, I don't need to read it again.
I learned this book more than I learned for my university exams, right?
I can write this book.
I'm giving a class on it. And I'm Yofi. Doesn't matter. Doesn't help. It helps, but it's not gonna. Baruch Hashem, it helps, but it's not. It's not the answer. Right, the answer is only. It's daily progress. Daily progress, and like Rav Dror was saying, we have to accept and love the rebuke. We have to know that if we want to move on, want to progress, that the only way we're going to progress is when we realize we're doing something wrong. There's only two ways of realizing you're doing something wrong. One is to come to the conclusion yourself after a lot of cheshbon nefesh, self-evaluation, in-depth prayer, and realization that I'm not actually doing what I should be. Or my wife telling me I'm a jerk. Right? They're the two basic ways that I'm going to... Right? And if the first one is not happening, and let's face it, it's not happening really. I do a little bit of hitbon adurta, I do a little bit of teshuvah, I do a little bit of cheshbon nefesh. I do a little bit of self-evaluation. But I'm not really getting so far under the surface. Then it has to come from somewhere else if I want to improve. The only other way it's going to come is when Hashem makes me fall, makes me slip up. I say, oh, you're right, look at that. I don't do that. Oh, look at that. I don't treat my wife that nice. Oh, I am still selfish. Oh, I do still think about the baseball scores when she's trying to tell me about her afternoon, or whatever it is. And if I am sensible, I'll pick up the cues from the smaller events. What's the smaller event mean? Smaller event means I'll be chatting to my wife, meaning I'll be listening to her tell me about her day, and she'll say to me, are you listening? She'll say, are you listening to me? Do you hear what I just said? And anyway, she'll carry on talking. That's a small cue. If I pick up on that small cue, and I, oh, you're right, I wasn't listening. Well, Hashem, I wasn't actually listening to you. I was actually thinking about, if I pick up on the small cue, Hashem doesn't need to give me the big slap. But if I ignore the small cue and I go, got away with that one. Oh, no, it's okay. Yeah, I was just... I just dropped something. Yeah, anyway, so tell me, right? And I managed to finesse my way out of it. Right, which I do. I don't know about anybody else. right? If I do that, then I'm going to have to get a slap. Because I missed the small cue. I didn't pick up on that. Hashem's very kind. He doesn't need to slap me. And for sure, he's giving me much more subtle messages that I can pick up on if I'm looking out for them and I'm prepared to accept, prepared to work on myself. Don't need to be rebuked. But if not, then I have to get rebuked. And then if I do get rebuked, then for Hashem. At least finally I've got the message, hopefully. But we know unfortunately there's still free choice. We look outside. I'm sure you know people like I know people. Who are not married anymore. They're not married anymore. They decided, oh, gave it up. What's the point in struggling? What's the point in fighting? Because they weren't prepared to listen to the rebuke. They weren't prepared to listen to the messages. They didn't see it as a message from Hashem. And now everyone has free choice. And it's not simply a case of, if Hashem slaps me enough, I'll wake up. No, I can still argue and rebel and fight and not accept. I have that Yetzer Hara. Right? So when I hear the rebuke, I finally get it. I should be very grateful that I finally got it. Thank you, Hashem, for finally allowing me to accept it. That I wasn't what I haven't been accepting up until now. I finally accepted it. And each of us has a point, Bezrat Hashem, where we finally willing to accept it. But sometimes it can be very difficult. You know, the more we want to hold on to our Yetzer Hara, the more we have to be hit until we finally get let go of it. But it's the biggest gift to finally let go of it. It's like when they used to, a person who didn't want to give his wife a get, they would beat him until he gave the get. And they asked the halachic question, but how can you do that? A get needs to be given by free will, otherwise it doesn't count. Right? If you force someone at gunpoint to give a get and they don't want to do it, so they can give a get, they can write their name on the piece of paper, but it's a worthless piece of paper. So how can you beat them up and say that was good, that was a valid get? Answer, because he actually really wanted to give the get. His Yetzer Hara was got in the way, but he wanted to give the get. We also want it. Our Yetzer Hara gets in the way, and eventually we get beaten up enough that we drop it. And we're like, after, Baruch Hashem, thank God I did. Right? That's what he really wanted to do, but I couldn't do it till now. Couldn't do it. Couldn't let go.
Similar.
Okay, but what's the in the Gemara language, what's the nafkamina? What do I get out of it? What's it going to help me?
What's
going to help me? What's it going to help me? Why is that important for me to know?
Why is it important? There's always this friction. You always do something that might be wrong, and you say, I did it wrong. You know, I did something wrong, like Moshe.
Daniel.
Daniel said it. You know, Daniel's been in the class for, and he knows it. You know, you learn that. But he missed it for a second. And his wife caught him on it.
Right.
Now, there's certain things that the wife must be
doing the same we're not allowed to catch them?
Yeah, it's not my problem to catch my wife. In fact, my job is not to catch her. My job is to catch my wife doing stuff she shouldn't be doing and to absolutely not do anything apart from love her. That's called unconditional love. What's unconditional love? It's loving someone even when they mess up. It's easy to love someone when they're doing everything right. But when they're not acting in the way that you want them to be acting, when they've messed up, when they've failed, and I still love them, that's unconditional love. Right? Because it's not conditional on anything. So my job as a husband is to give unconditional love.
I had something this my wife is going to the States on her own with our oldest daughter, and she'll be spending time with her cousin and visiting her sister. And I've been making plans in the way for that. And I'm going to do here a while. And all of a sudden, we've been hosting someone in the house who's going to come back to Jerusalem and visit. Oh, well, you come back, you know, you're welcome to come back next week. I stop here next week.
Right.
And this is basically what she's telling this person.
She told him that he could come and stay with you while you're away, right?
Yeah, and it's going to be lonely, you know. Yeah. He's going to be home alone. It might be nice. Without self-belief or anything.
Right.
I'm not supposed to react to that.
You are. You're supposed to say, Hashem, what are you doing to me? You're not supposed to say, my wife, what are you doing to me? You say, Hashem, what are you doing to me, Hashem?
When do I say this?
Now, when as soon as it happens. Hashem, what are you, not in front of my face.
You'd be disappointed.
Afterwards, right? When you, right?
Inside.
You're like, Tom, you can't run out, to the field, then can't run out, you maybe can't run out with. But the question is to Hashem. The question is not to your wife. So ultimately, you're going to have to deal with it, right? But similar thing happened. Similar is not as bad, but just because it's similar. But on first night Sukkot, my wife came back and said, "Oh, so and so neighbors invited us for first night Sukkot. I don't actually like so and so neighbors. I don't have to like everyone in the world, and I don't like it, man." He's got issues, right? And I don't want to go there, especially not on first night of Sukkot. It's Chag, right? I want to be happy, I want to be enjoying Chag. And I'm like, and my wife has invited us over and said, she already said yes to them. What do I do? I need to think about it. So eventually, Tov Hashem gave me put it into my head. And I said to my wife, you know what? Can we postpone it? Because actually, I like to be in my sukkah. I just got to have it. I want to be in my sukkah, just for myself. Right? And she's like, oh, okay, fine. She told them. And fine, Baruch Hashem, that was, we solved it. But it was not against her. Even though she put me in that position, Hashem is putting me in the position. Hashem is telling his wife to have a go at Daniel about the iPhone. Right? Coming via the wife, as we learned from the previous chapters. But she's only messing up because Hashem is making her mess up. She's not in control of herself. It's often we can say that. I don't know if we can say that on tape. But in this way, she is a puppet for Hashem to teach me something. A husband that wants to raise himself up in spirituality needs to know well that all the time that his wife feels that she is at the top of the preference ladder that my comrade shot in first place, she's going to be full of happiness and life. And she is able to stand in all difficulties and challenges. And most important, she is going to turn out to be an Ezer Meshulam, a complete help. Right? A woman is called Ezer Kenegdo. Ezer Kenegdo. What's Ezer Kenegdo mean? It's a strange phrase that has two, it's an oxymoron. It has two opposite meanings. Ezer means a helper, and Kenegdo means against him. So there's many with different perishim. One, the simple perish is that when you're doing what you should be doing, she's an Ezer, she helps you, and when you're not doing what you should be doing, she's a Kenegdo, she's against you. But you can also say that Ezer Kenegdo means she helps you by being against you. Right? She goes against what, like, you're, it's good to, my natural instinct is going to destroy the world and myself and my family, Chas v'Shalom, right? It's not, I've got good will and good desire, but my Yetzer is a bit stronger, right? So my wife has to be against me for my own sake. You really don't want to buy that big red car with the sunroof and the whatever, right? She has to be against me, right? It's your turn to get up and look after the kids. Oh, do I have to? I'm tired. Yes, you do. Right? She's against me. I don't want to do it. I want to go to bed. But it's good for me. I need to work on myself and spend more time with the kids and do whatever else she wants me to do that I don't want to do. Right? She knows me better than I know myself. She knows what's better for me. I'm blind. A person's blinded, right? We say that a bribe blinds the wise. A bribe blinds the wise. We learn that on Moshe and Aaron. Gemara brings, even if Moshe and Aaron wanted to be judges, and it was the value of a pruta, and they were going to acquit the innocent and make the guilty liable, they're still not allowed to do it, because a pruta will blind the eyes of even Moshe and Aaron. Right? So what do we learn from that? That a person can't judge if they're bribed. And the fact is, we are bribed by our own Yetzer Hara. Our own lusts and desires is a bribe for us. If I like chocolate ice cream, and I have to choose between which brand to pick, I'm going to pick chocolate ice cream, so I'm biased. Same is true in everything in my life. I have a disposition, a predisposition. That's called a bias. That's called a bribe. Something is good for me. Something I get out of it. Right? Therefore, it's very difficult for a person to judge himself truthfully. Right? If a person wants to decide, I'm going to pick up on Rav George's theme now, because why not? He started it, so I'm standing in his shoes, so don't beat up on me. Right? If a person wants to decide now whether or not he should get rid of his iPhone, right? So how's he going to decide that? Rav Dessler, difficulty. Rav Dessler says in his book Strive for Truth, that a person can't really decide for himself. Why not? Because he's already got a bribe. He's already got a predisposition. Mm-hmm. I actually like the iPhone, otherwise I wouldn't have bought it. Spend a lot of money on it. I get a lot out of it. I can't make that decision. I can't weigh up the facts equally. Well, actually, it's good because I learned Torah from it, but it's bad because it's got nasty pictures in it. But it's good, it's cheaper than going to an internet cafe to email my parents. I can't make those. I can't weigh up because I'm already biased. So he says over there, Rav Jessler says in Strive for Truth, he says the way out of it. He says there's only two ways out of this. One is you need to go to someone who doesn't have that same bias. He says go to a tzaddik that's worked on themselves and clean them of the bias that you have, and then he can answer in a straight way, because he's not biased. Or a third party that doesn't have that issue, he can weigh up, because I can't weigh up. I'm not sensitive. He says, if you haven't got that, he said, it is possible for a person he doesn't use the word hipodidot, but he uses pretty much the same concept, through working on himself and praying to Hashem to get to the truth. The truth is within all of us. A neshama knows the truth. If we can get to the truth in our neshama, we can get to the answer. But we need to get down to that point, and not to be missed by the surface. He says that the pasuk of bribery blinds the eyes and perverts the form of the pasuk. It's in two sections. it.
Yeah.
Right, it blinds the eyes of the wise and it perverts the words of the righteous. He says, why is it in twofold? He says, it's in twofold because it teaches you about what happens. He says, a person who's already biased, he says, firstly, the correct argument won't come to him. He said, it won't arise in his mind, the correct argument. Right? When I'm thinking of myself, if this is good, if this is bad, maybe yes, maybe no, maybe yes. The correct argument just won't occur to me. It just won't be there. And then he says, and part two, the second half of the verse says that it distorts the judgment of the righteous. That even if someone who is righteous comes up to me and gives me that good argument, gives me the correct argument, I'll distort it to not hear it. I won't be able, it won't filter through. So if someone says, you know what, the truth is, the correct argument is, your rabbi said, drop it and that's the only argument you need. Right? And if that is the correct argument, right? It's not an argument I would have come up with. I was still thinking about whether it's got good pictures or bad pictures or Torah or not Torah. Right? And the correct argument is, your rabbi said no, finished, you don't need any other argument. So first of all, that argument is not going to occur to me. I'm never going to occur to me myself. And then if someone does come to me with that argument, I'm going to distort it and say, yeah, but he's not talking to me. I'm going to distort that and make it mean something else. So what am I going to do? The really thing I can do is go and pray to Hashem to give me clarity.
Hashem is merciful. He'll do what happened to us. Our service provider upgraded system, mailed us new phones. As soon as I opened it up, I couldn't use it.
If you're being kind to.
Right. I couldn't use it. I tried turning it on. I tried dialing a number. I don't have two eyes to use it.
We need to be open to listen to Hashem's messages. I was studying 7 or 8 years ago in Kiryat Sefer with a rav there. And it's just when the transition from these things to the rest of the market came out, and the Rabbanim started to say you shouldn't have a non-kosher phone. Let's call it. Shouldn't have a non-kosher phone, right? And the Rav was giving a shiur, and he was saying, "So I had one of these other phones, and it had some text on it, and I would send pictures, but I wasn't using it for anything, chas v'shalom, right? But I had one of those phones, and I was thinking, and I heard the Rabbanim say, no, you need a kosher phone, and I was like, oh." Everybody else needs a kosher phone that's going to be can't control themselves or is right, but me and Tom, I'm not using it. So he said, Tom, so he said, what happened? He said, I kept it in my top pocket, my shirt. He said, one day I went to the bathroom and it fell straight in there. And he said, Tom, Hashem, I got the message, thank you very much. Right, and he took the message. But it depends on me, because someone else can say, oh, what's the message? The message is remember to put it in my pocket, not to put it there. That's the message. Right? So it depends what I'm open for.
What about the people who are coming to our class from abroad?
Yeah.
Let's say watching by Torah on YouTube.
Right, so they're not the rabbi, so Rabbi Arush is not speaking to those people. Rabbi Arush is speaking to a person who is already here. He's speaking to us. Person has to weigh up what the benefit is, what he gains and what he loses. Yofi, I'm going to miss out on a shiur of the rap. I'm going to miss out on watching it again. I'm going to miss out on, I know, whatever it is, Wikipedia, whatever it is. Right? And I'm going to miss out, for sure I'm going to miss out, right? You don't get nothing in this world for free. You have to give up something. Right? If it was easy, then wouldn't even be on the table as a question. Right? So I'm giving up. The question is, what am I giving up and what am I gaining? Right? I'm also losing. I'm losing by having a phone that doesn't do much. Your feet, top. Right. But what am I gaining? I'm gaining my neshama. I have to make that decision. Which is more important for me? It's going to be more difficult. And people give up not having the internet at home. Right. It's a big thing to not have internet at home. And the big argument for most from Jews. one of their sticking points is, I Skype my parents. I Skype my parents abroad, and they can't see me and the kids. So that's a big whale. So what's more important? Is it more important for me to see a picture on Skype while I'm speaking, and not just use a phone like we've done for the last 2,000 years? Right? Or is it more important for me to get rid of the internet, and I'm going to actually, the neshamas of me and my family are going to, right? Which is more important? And they're both difficult decisions.
How does the internet block your neshama?
How? Rav Aris said, as you were hearing in the class, Rav Aris said it's better to have an idol in your pocket. And he wasn't talking about personal use. He said rather than hold.
No, I'm saying
rather than hold.
What does it do? How does it
do? I can't tell you because I'm not at that level. But for sure, my rabbi is not in the pocket of the kosher phone industry. He's not telling me that because
for the validity of it, because if you can't check something for yourself, then there's a problem.
It's not. If I can't check something for myself, I have to rely on someone who knows. What's it mean? It's like I'm, you know, one of those mazes, right? One of the big garden mazes, those big old fancy gardens, and they have mazes, and you can't see where you're going. You need to try and find your way out. Yofi. So we're like the people in the maze. We have no clue where we're going or what's around the next corner, where I'm traveling. Right? Who do I need to listen to? I need to listen to someone who's been through the maze and know what's behind that corner, where that leads and where that leads. And he's telling me turn left. Why? I can't explain it to you. Even if I tried to explain it, you wouldn't understand and you wouldn't believe me. But trust me.
But you could say, oh, I can see it, so that's what I'm telling you.
But I can't see it.
And the person that's telling
me. That's what he's saying. He's saying, I'm telling you, this is burning and destroying your neshama. I can see it. And you'll say, well, I can't see it. And he says, yes, that's because you're in the maze.
No, I'm asking how. Like,
how does he see
everything else we do? It's like, oh, well, this is in the Gemara here, this is in the Zohar, this is in the Mishnah. Where is it? Where is it in the Gemara? Where is it in the Mishnah? Where
okay, so if you read Brit Yashalom, then it's all spelled out in there. But the Gemara is clear. It's the Shulchan Aruch is clear that it is forbidden. It's an Issur to get benefit in the words of the Shulchan Aruch out of a woman's little finger that you get enjoyment from. Not to see a finger, you can see the whole face, right? We don't cover, we're not burkas, we don't, right?
So
but to get enjoyment.
Female images.
Mostly yes. And each female image that a man sees destroys the Avodah Hashem. Destroys the Avodah Hashem. I gave up watching movies, Hollywood movies, about 7 years ago. About 6 months after I came to Eretz Yisrael. I'm still watching movies. Well, not like dodgy movies, but like movies. Why did I stop? The last movie I saw was after 9/11. It was about Flight, I know it's called Flight, whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
Flight, whatever it was. And it was about the flight that the passengers took over and it crashed them in. Awful. And no dodgy scenes in there at all, right? It's just about people on a plane, right? The reason why I stopped watching movies after that, even though there was a really good James Bond film that came out like 2 months later, and I really, really wanted to see it because I've seen every single James Bond film, right? The reason why I stopped after that is because next morning I went to Shacharit and I couldn't pray. I opened the door and there was no one home. I was blank, blank, blank up here. And I got told. And it was a gift that I saw that. And I really wanted it. I love movies. Right? And I saw it. But while I'm inside it, and while I'm biased, my mash biased, because a man has no greater desire, no stronger desire than the desire to look at other women. That's our strongest desire. Full stop. So there is no higher bribe that you can put in front of me. So there's going to be no bigger test in the world that you're going to have. Reality. Well, maybe. We're not talking about people dying and crazy, but day to day. If a pruta, one coin, has the ability to sway a judgment, and blind the person. And the Gemara has plenty of stories about small things swaying great men. Then Kal Vachomer 100 times, 1,000 times, a 1,000,000 times more, how were right? I read the book Priti Hashalom, all about guarding my eyes. And you know what? It's going in one ear, it's going out the other. Why? Because I'm still stuck in looking at women. Right? Even though he's making good arguments and it's all true and it's all from the Torah and he's understanding my Rav and I believe him and I trust him and I want to do exactly what he says. But I can't. Why? Because I'm still like. Right? Until I can get through that, I can't get through it. I'm stuck in the maze and I'm going to go round and round in circles. Until at some point I have to let go of the dead sheret. The Gemara has a mashal, an analogy of a person who comes to dip in the mikvah. He wants to dip in, but he's holding on to a dead sheret. Dead sheret is a source of tumah, and he's holding it in his hand, and he wants to dip in the mikvah while holding his sheret. That's us. We want the purity. We want the. It doesn't help to dip in the mikvah, by the way, holding a dead sheret. You don't get the benefit of the mikvah, right? But we want, that's who we are. We want to dip in the mikvah of purity. We want to be holy and kadosh. But we want to hold on to our
tabor. Dipping in the mikvah of women's trait because it was made for that one thing and we adopted it.
Don't know.
And originally did not go into the mikvah.
Don't know. The source of mikvah is wider and deeper than just women. Right, the concept of the Mabul, the flood, is a mikvah for the world. A mikvah purifies. The people in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, when they did sins, the men would go in the mikvah as part of their purification process. So it's a lot wider than just women. Women is just one aspect of it.
In Hagigah, it covers everything about mikvah for men.
Yeah, but that's talking about a man who became impure, and whenever he has to go in the mikvah to be purified. Whether or not it's only later that men, chassidut, took it on themselves to dip every day, even though we're not doing the Beit HaMikdash thing. I don't know. I don't know what the sources are in the argument, whether now is different than before, but.
Yeah.
Okay.
We still have the level of purity that we have maintained, at least on some level.
Yeah. In order to eat truma, we had to go to the mikvah.
But mentioning about the kosher phones,
yeah.
I'm having a problem where you can't get a kosher phone from the major carriers now. They all have a big screen.
Okay. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the answer is to kosher phones. And the truth is, this is not even a kosher phone. This has text on it.
Because we originally got them.
But I had this because I asked Rav Dror. Rav Dror says, Rav Ari says texting is fine.
We got three kosher phones.
So long as it's only got phone and text, and that's it.
And then my daughter lost hers. She couldn't get a replacement.
Okay.
I don't know what to do.
Go to the kosher phone stores. The kosher phones don't measure.
There's kosher phone store in the shrink?
They cover orange and silicone.
Okay.
But
also, mentioning about the internet. I have to use the internet all the time for podcasting.
So a person who has a specific job can have, and the yeshiva has its own office which runs an internet site.
Right.
So anyone who has a valid reason to be there, it's like to be in Chutz La'aretz. A person could be in Chutz La'aretz if they have a genuine need to be there, they're helping, they're bringing people back, they're doing kirul. Yofi, they've got a reason. But the only person that knows is you and Hashem, whether or not I need to be. I have a valid reason. Right? So I'm not fooling anyone. Right? There's only me. There's me and him. So I don't have to prove myself. I don't have to prove myself to my rabbi. I don't have to prove myself to my friends. I have to prove myself to Hashem. That's all. As long as I can do that, everything's good.
I mean, after 250 podcasts, I'm.
Yofi, gentlemen, thank you very much.